Genoa was a fairy-tale city. People smiled and were joyful the livelong day, especially if they wanted to see another livelong day. Lilith made certain of that. Of course, people had probably thought they were happy in the days before she'd seen to it that the Duke replaced the old Baron, but it was a random, untidy happiness, which was why it was so easy for her to move in. But it wasn't a way of life. There was no pattern to it. One day, they'd thank her. Of course, there were always a few difficult ones. Sometimes people just don't know how to act. You did your best for them. You ruled their city properly. You ensured that their lives were worthwhile and full of happiness every hour of the day. And then, for no reason at all, they turned on you. Guards lined the audience chamber. And there was an audience. Technically, of course, it was the ruler who gave the audience, but Lilith liked to see people watching. One penny worth of example was worth a pound of punishment. There wasn't a lot of crime in Genoa these days, at least not what would be considered crime elsewhere. Things like theft were easily dealt with and hardly required any kind of judicial process. Far more important, in Lilith's book, were crimes against narrative expectation. People didn't seem to know how they should behave. Lilith held a mirror up to life and chopped all the bits off life that didn't fit. The Duke lounged bonelessly on his throne, one leg dangling over the armrest. He'd never got the hang of chairs.
"And what has this one done?" he said, and yawned.
Opening his mouth wide was something he was good at least. A little old man cowered between two guards. There's always someone willing to be a guard, even in places like Genoa. Besides, you've got a really smart uniform with blue trousers and a red coat and a high black hat with a cockade in it.
But I can't whistle, quavered the old man. I didn't know it was compulsory.
But you are a toy maker, said the Duke. Toy makers whistle and sing the whole day long.
He glanced at Lilith. She nodded.
I don't know any songs, said the toy maker. I never got taught songs, just how to make toys. I was apprenticed at making toys 7 years before the little hammer, man and boy.
It says here,
said the Duke, making a creditable impersonation of someone reading the charge sheet in front of him,
that you don't tell the children stories.
No one ever told me about telling stories, said the toy maker. Look, I just make toys. Toys. That's all I'm good at, toys. I make good toys. I'm just a toy maker. You can't be a good toy maker if you don't tell stories to the children, said Lilith, leaning forward.
The toy maker looked up at the veiled face.
Don't know any, he said. You don't know any? I could tell 'em how to make toys,
the old man quavered. Lilith sat back. It was impossible to see her expression under the veil.
I think it would be a good idea if the people's guards here took you away, she said, to a place where you will certainly learn to sing, and possibly after a while you might even whistle. Won't that be nice?
The old Baron's dungeons had been disgusting. Lilith had had them repainted and refurnished, with a lot of mirrors. When the audience was over, one member of the crowd slipped out through the palace kitchens. The guards on the side gate didn't try to stop her. She was a very important person in the small compass of their lives. Hello, Mrs. Pleasant. She stopped, reached into her basket, and produced a couple of roast chicken legs.
Just trying a new peanut coating, she said. Would value your opinion, boys.
They took them gratefully. Everyone liked to see Mrs. Pleasant. She could do things with a chicken that would almost make it glad it had been killed.
And now I'm just going out to get some herbs, she said.
They watched her as she went like a fat, determined arrow in the direction of the marketplace, which was right on the edge of the river. Then they ate the chicken legs. Mrs. Pleasant bustled along the market stalls, and she took great care to bustle. Even in Genoa, there were always people ready to tell a tale, especially in Genoa. She was a cook, so she bustled, and made sure she stayed fat and was, fortunately, naturally jolly. She made sure she had floury arms at all times. If she felt under suspicion, she'd say things like, "Lawks!" She seemed to be getting away with it so far. She looked for the sign, and there it was. Perched up on the roof pole of a stall that was otherwise stacked with cages of hens, gazoots, wheelie cranes, and other fowl, was a black cockerel. The voodoo doctor was in. Even as her eye found it, the cockerel's head turned to look at her. Set a little way back from the rest of the stalls was a small tent, similar to many around the market. A cauldron bubbled in front of it on a charcoal fire. There were bowls beside it and a ladle, and beside them a plate with coins on it. There were quite a lot of coins. People paid for Mrs. Goggle's cooking, whatever they thought it was worth, and the plate was hardly big enough. The thick liquid in the cauldron was an unappetizing brown. Mrs. Pleasant helped herself to a bowlful and waited. Mrs. Goggle had certain talents. After a while, a voice from the tent said, "What's new, Mrs. Pleasant?" "She shut up the toy maker," said Mrs. Pleasant, for the air in general. "And yesterday it was old Devereux, the innkeeper, for not being fat and not having a big red face. That's four times this month."
"You come in, Mrs. Pleasant."
It was dark and hot inside the tent. There was another fire in there and another pot. Mrs. Goggle was hunched over it, stirring. She motioned the cook to a pair of bellows.
"Blow up the coals a tad, and we'll see what's what," she said.
Mrs. Pleasant obeyed. She didn't use magic herself, other than that necessary to get a roux to turn or bread to rise, but she respected it in others, especially in the likes of Mrs. Goggle. The charcoal blazed white. The thick liquid in the pot began to churn. Mrs. Goggle peered into the steam.
"What are you doing, Mrs. Goggle?"
said the cook anxiously.
"Trying to see what's going to happen," said the voodoo woman.
The voice dropped into the rolling growl of the psychically gifted. Mrs. Pleasant squinted into the roiling mass.
"Someone's going to be eating shrimp," she said helpfully.
"You see that bit of okra?"
said Mrs. Goggle.
"You see the way the crab legs keep coming up just there?"
"You never were one to stint the crab meat," said Mrs. Pleasant.
"See the way the bubbles is so thick by the oku leaves? See the way it all spirals around that purple onion?"
"I see it, I see it," said Mrs. Pleasant.
"And you know what that means?"
"Means it's going to taste real fine."
"Sure," said Mrs. Goggle kindly, "and it means some people's coming."
"Wow, how many?"
Mrs. Goggle dipped a spoon into the seething mass and tasted it.
"Three people," she said. She smacked her lips thoughtfully. "Women."
She dipped the spoon again.
"Have a taste," she said. "There's a cat, too. You can tell by the sassafras."
She smacked her lips. "Grey. One eye." She explored the cavity of a tooth with her tongue. "The left one." Mrs. Pleasant's jaw dropped.
"They'll find you before they find me," said Mrs. Goggle. "You lead them here."
Mrs. Pleasant stared at Mrs. Goggle's grim smile and then back down at the mixture in the pot.
"They're coming all this way for a taste," she said.
"Sure," Mrs. Goggle sat back. "You mean to see the girl in the White House?"
Mrs. Pleasant nodded.
"Young Embers," she said. "Yeah, when I can, when the sisters are out at the palace." "They got her real scared, Mrs. Goggle."
She looked down at the pot again and back up to Mrs. Goggle.
"Can you really see?
I expect you've got things to marinate,"
said Mrs. Goggle.
"Yeah, yeah."
Mrs. Pleasant backed out, but with reluctance. Then she halted. Mrs. Pleasant, at rest, was not easily moved again until she wanted to be.
"That Lilith woman says she can see the whole world in mirrors," she said, in slightly accusing tones.
Mrs. Goggle shook her head.
"All anyone gets in a mirror is themselves," she said, "but what you get in a good gumbo is everything."
Mrs. Pleasant nodded. This was a well-known fact. She couldn't dispute it. Mrs. Goggle shook her head sadly when the cook had gone. A voodoo woman was reduced to all sorts of stratagems in order to appear knowing, but she felt slightly ashamed of letting an honest woman believe that she could see the future in a pot of gumbo. Because all you could see in a pot of Mrs. Goggle's gumbo was that the future certainly contained a very good meal. She'd really seen it in a bowl of jambalaya she'd prepared earlier. Magrat lay with the wand under her pillow. She wobbled gently between sleep and wakefulness. Certainly she was the best person for the wand. There was no doubt about that. Sometimes and she hardly dared give the thought headroom when she was under the same roof as Granny Weatherwax, she really wondered about the other's commitment to witchcraft. Half the time, they didn't seem to bother. Take medicine, for example. Magrat knew she was much better than them at herbs. She'd inherited several large books on the subject from Goody Wemper, her predecessor in the cottage, and had essayed a few tentative notes of her own as well. She could tell people things about the uses of devil's bit scabious that would interest them so much they'd rush off, presumably, to look for someone else to tell. She could fractionally distill and double distill and do things that meant sitting up all night watching the colour of the flame under the retort. She worked at it. Whereas Nanny just tended to put a hot poultice on everything and recommend a large glass of whatever the patient liked best on the basis that since you were going to be ill anyway, you might as well get some enjoyment out of it. Magrat forbade her patients alcohol because of what it did to the liver. If they didn't know what it did to the liver, she spent some time telling them. And Granny, she just gave people a bottle of coloured water and told them they felt a lot better. And what was so annoying was that they often did. Where was the witchcraft in that? With a wand, though, things could be different. You could help people a lot with a wand. Magic was there to make life better. Magrat knew this in the pink fluttering boudoir of her heart. She dipped under the surface of sleep again. And there was an odd dream. She never mentioned it to anyone afterwards because, well, you didn't. Not things like that. But she thought she'd got up in the night, awakened by the silence, to get some more air. And as she passed the mirror, she saw a movement in it. It wasn't her face. It looked a lot like Granny Weatherwax. It smiled at her, a much nicer and friendlier smile than she'd ever got from Granny, Magrat recalled, and then vanished, the cloudy silver surface closing over it. She hurried back to bed and awoke to the sound of a brass band engaged in unrelenting oompa. People were shouting and laughing. Magrat got dressed quickly, went out into the corridor, and knocked on the door of the older witch's. There was no reply. She tried the handle. After she'd rattled it a couple of times, there was a thump, as the chair wedged under the handle on the other side, the better to deter ravishers, burglars, and other nocturnal intruders, fell over. Granny Weatherwax's boots protruded from under the covers at one end of the bed. Nanny Ogg's bare feet, Nanny being something of a nighttime revolver, were beside them. Faint snores rattled the jug on the washbasin. These were no longer the full-nosed roars of a quick 40 winks catnapper, but the well-paced growls of someone who intends to make a night of it. Magrat knocked on the sole of Granny's boot. "Hey, wake up! Something's going on!" Granny Weatherwax waking up was quite an impressive sight, and one not seen by many people. Most people on waking up accelerate through a quick, panicky, pre-conscious check-up. Who am I? Where am I? Who is he? She? Good God, why am I cuddling a policeman's helmet? What happened last night? And this is because people are riddled by doubt. It is the engine that drives them through their lives. It is the elastic band in the little model aeroplane of their soul. And they spend their time winding it up until it knots. Early morning is the worst time. There's that little moment of panic in case you have drifted away in the night and something else has moved in. This never happened to Granny Weatherwax. She went straight from fast asleep to instant operation on all six cylinders. She never needed to find herself because she always knew who was doing the looking. She sniffed. "Something's burning," she said. "They've got a bonfire too," said Magrat. Granny sniffed again. "They're roasting garlic," she said. "I know. I can't imagine why. They're ripping all the shutters off the windows and burning them in the square and dancing around the fire." Granny Weatherwax gave Nanny Ogg a vicious jab with her elbow. "Wake up, you." "I didn't get a wink of sleep all night," said Granny reproachfully. "What with her snoring." Nanny Ogg raised the covers cautiously. "It's far too early in the morning for it to be early in the morning," she said. "Come on," said Granny. "We need your skill with languages." The owner of the inn flapped his arms up and down and ran around in circles. Then he pointed at the castle that towered over the forest. Then he sucked vigorously at his wrist. Then he fell over on his back. And then he looked expectantly at Nanny Ogg, while behind him the bonfire of garlic and wooden stakes and heavy window shutters burned merrily. "No," said Nanny after a while. "Still non comprendi, mein Herr." The man got up and brushed some dust off his leather breeches. "I think he's saying that someone's dead," said Magrat. "Someone in the castle."
Well, I must say everyone seems very cheerful about it, said Granny Weatherwax, severely. In the sunlight of the new day, the village looked far more cheerful. Everyone kept nodding happily at the witches.
That's because it was probably the landlord, said Nanny Og. Bit of a bloodsucker, I think he's saying.
Ah, that'll be it then.
Granny rubbed her hands together and looked approvingly at the breakfast table, which had been dragged out into the sunshine.
Anyway, the food has certainly improved. Pass the bread, Magrat.
Everyone keeps smiling and waving at us, said Magrat. And look at all this food.
That's only to be expected, said Granny with a mouthful. They've only had us here one night and already they're learning it's lucky to be kind to witches. Now, help me get the lid off this honey.
Under the table, Gribo sat and washed himself. Occasionally he burped. Vampires have risen from the dead, the grave and the crypt, but have never managed it from the cat.
Dear Jason, and all at number 21, number 34, number 15, number 87 and number 61, but not at number 18 until she gives back the bowl she definitely borrowed, whatever she says. Well, here we are. Caw but a lark so far. Don't ask me about pumpkins. Still, no harm done. I'm drawing a picture of where we stayed last night. I have put an X on our room where our room is. The weather...
What are you doing, Giffer? We're ready to leave.
Nanny Og looked up, her face still creased with the effort of composition.
I thought it would be nice to send something to our Jason, you know, to stop him worrying. So I done a drawing of this place on a piece of card, and mine hair here will give it to someone going our way. You never know, it might get there.
Continues fine. Nanny Og sucked the end of her pencil. Not for the first time in the history of the universe, someone for whom communication normally came as effortlessly as a dream was stuck for inspiration when faced with a few lines on the back of a card.
Well, that about wraps it up for now. We'll write, crossed out, write again soon, Mum. P.S. The cat is looking very peaky. I think he misses his home.
Will you come on, Giffer? Magrat's getting my broom started for me.
P.P.S. Granny sends her love.
Nanny Og sat back, content in the knowledge of a job well done. Nanny Og sent a number of cards home to her family, not a single one of which got back before she did. This is traditional and happens everywhere in the universe. Magrat reached the end of the town square and stopped to rest. Quite an audience had gathered to see a woman with legs. They were very polite about it. Somehow, that made it worse.
It doesn't fly unless you run really fast, she explained, aware even as she spoke how stupid this sounded, especially if you were listening in a foreign language. I think it's called hump starting.
She took a deep breath, scowled in concentration, and ran forward again. This time, it started. It jolted in her hands. The bristles rustled. She managed to slip it into neutral before it could drag her along the ground. One thing about Granny Weatherwax's broomstick... It was one of the very old-fashioned ones built in the days when broomsticks were built to last and not fall apart with woodworm after 10 years, was that while it might take some starting, when it went, it didn't hang about. Magrat had once considered explaining the symbolism of the witch's broomstick to Granny Weatherwax, and decided not to. It would have been worse than the row about the significance of the maypole. Departure took some time. The villagers insisted on giving them little gifts of food. Nanny Og made a speech which no one understood, but which was generally cheered. Gribo, hiccuping occasionally, oozed into his accustomed place among the bristles of Nanny's broomstick. As they rose above the forest, a thin plume of smoke also rose from the castle. And then there were flames.
I see people dancing in front of it, said Magrat.
Always a dangerous business renting property, said Granny Weatherwax. I expect he was a bit lax when it came to redecorating and repairing the roof and such like. People take against that kind of thing. My landlord hasn't done a hand's turn on my cottage the whole time I've been there, she added. It's shameful. And me an old woman, too.
I thought you owned your place, said Magrat, as the broomsticks set off over the forest. She just ain't paid no rent for 60 years, said Nanny Og.
Is that my fault? Said Granny Weatherwax. It's not my fault. I'd be quite willing to pay.
She smiled a slow, self-confident smile.
All he has to do is ask, she added.
This is the Discworld seen from above, its cloud formations circling in long curved patterns. Three dots emerged from the cloud layer.
I can see why travelling doesn't catch on. I call this boring. Nothing but forest for hours and hours.
Yes, but flying gets you to places quickly, Granny.
How long have we been flying anyway?
About 10 minutes since you last asked, Esme.
You see? Boring.
It's sitting on the sticks I don't like. I reckon there ought to be a special broomstick for going long distances, right? One you could stretch out on and have a snooze. They all considered this.
And have your meals on, added Nanny.
Proper meals, I mean, with gravy. Not just sandwiches and stuff.
An experiment in aerial cookery on a small oil burner had been hastily curtailed after it threatened to set fire to Nanny's broomstick.
I suppose you could do it if you had a really big broomstick, said Magrat, about the size of a tree, perhaps. Then one of us could do the steering, and another one could do the cooking.
It'd never happen, said Nanny Og, the reason being the dwarfs would make you pay a fortune for a stick that big.
Yes, but what you could do, said Magrat, warming to her subject, is get people to pay you to give them rides. There must be lots of people fed up with highwaymen and being seasick and that sort of thing.
How about it, Esme? Said Nanny Og. I'll do the steering and Magrat'll do the cooking.
What shall I do, then? Said Granny Weatherwax suspiciously.
Oh, well, there ought to be someone to, you know, welcome people onto the stick and give them their meals, said Magrat, and tell them what to do if the magic fails, for example.
If the magic fails, everyone will crash to the ground and die, Granny pointed out.
Yes, but someone will have to tell them how to do that, said Nanny Og, winking at Magrat. They won't know how to, not being experienced in flying.
And we could call ourselves, she paused. As always on the Discworld, which was right on the very edge of unreality, little bits of realness crept in whenever someone's mind was resonating properly. This happened now.
Three witches airborne, she said. How about that?
Broomsticks airborne, said Magrat, or pan air.
There's no need to bring religion into it, sniffed Granny.
Nanny Og looked slyly from Granny to Magrat.
We could call it Virgin, she began.
A gust of wind caught all three sticks and whirled them up. There was a brief panic as the witches brought them under control.
Load of nonsense, muttered Granny.
Well, it passes the time, said Nanny Og.
Granny looked morosely at the greenery below.
You'd never get people to do it, she said. Load of nonsense.
Dear Jason on Famil, Overleaf on the other side, please find enclosed a sketch of somewhere some king died and was buried, search me why. It's in some village where we stopped last night. We had some stuff, it was chewy, you'll never guess it was snails. And not bad. And Esme had three helpings before she found out and then had a row with the cook, and Magrat was sick all night just at the thought of it, and had a diarrhea. Thinking of you, your loving mum, P.S. the privies here are disgusting. They have them indoors. So much for hygiene.
Several days passed. In a quiet little inn in a tiny country, Granny Weatherwax sat and regarded the food with deep suspicion. The owner hovered with the frantic expression of one who knows, even before he starts, that he's not going to come out of this ahead of the game.
Good, simple, home cooking, said Granny. That's all I require. You know me, I'm not the demanding sort. No one could say I'm the demanding sort. I just want simple food, not all grease and stuff. It comes to something when you complain about something in your lettuce and it turns out to be what you ordered.
Nanny Og tucked her napkin into the top of her dress and said nothing.
Like that place last night, said Granny. You'd think you'd be all right with sandwiches, wouldn't you? I mean, sandwiches? Simplest food there is in the old world. You'd think even foreigners couldn't get sandwiches wrong.
They didn't call them sandwiches, Granny, said Magrat, her eyes dwelling on the owner's frying pan. They called them, I think they called them Smorgy's Board. Oh, they was nice, said Nanny Og. I'm very partial to a pickled herring.
But they must think we're daft, not noticing they'd left off the top slice, said Granny triumphantly. Well, I told them a thing or two. Another time they'll think twice before trying to swindle people out of a slice of bread that's theirs by rights.
I expect they will, said Magrat darkly.
And I don't hold with all this giving things funny names so people don't know what they're eating, said Granny, determined to explore the drawbacks of international cookery to the full. I like stuff that tells you plain what it is, like, well, Bubble and Squeak, or
Spotted Dick, said Nanny absently.
She was watching the progress of the pancakes with some anticipation. That's right. Decent, honest food. I mean, take that stuff we had for lunch. I'm not saying it wasn't nice, said Granny graciously. In a foreign sort of way, of course. But they called it Quesus de Granoli. And who knows what that means?
Frog's legs, translated Nanny without thinking. The silence was filled with Granny Weatherwax taking a deep breath and a pale green colour creeping across Magrat's face. Nanny Og now thought quicker than she had done for a very long time.
Not actual frog's legs, she said hurriedly. It's like Todd in the Hall is really only sausage and butter pudding. It's just a joke name. It doesn't sound very funny to me, said Granny. She turned to glare at the pancakes. At least they can't muck up a decent pancake, she said. What do they call them here?
Crap Suzette, I think, said Nanny. Granny forbore to comment, but she watched with grim satisfaction as the owner finished the dish and gave her a hopeful smile.
Ah, now he expects us to eat them, she said. He only goes and sets fire to them, and then he still expects us to eat them.
It might later have been possible to chart the progress of the witches across the continent by some sort of demographic survey. Long afterwards, in some quiet, onion-hung kitchens, in sleepy villages nestling among hot hills, you might have found cooks who wouldn't twitch and try to hide behind the door when a stranger came into the kitchen.
Dear Jason, it is definitely more warmer here. Magrat says it is because we are getting further from the hub. And a funny thing, all the money is different. You have to change it for other money, which is all different shapes, and is not proper money at all, in my opinion. We generally let Esme sort that out. She gets a very good rate of exchange. It is amazing. Magrat says she will write a book called Travelling on $1 a Day, and it's always the same dollar. Esme is getting to act just like a foreigner. Yesterday, she took her shawl off. Next thing, he will be dancing on tables. This is a picture of some famous bridge or other. Lots of love, Mum.
The sun beat down on the cobbled street, and particularly on the courtyard of a little inn.
It's hard to imagine, said Magrat, that it's autumn back home. Garcon, mucho vino avec ze, gracias.
The innkeeper, who did not understand one word and was a good-natured man who certainly did not deserve to be called a garcon, smiled at Nanny. He'd smile at anyone with such an unlimited capacity for drink.
I don't hold with putting all these tables out in the street, though, said Granny Weatherwax, although without much severity. It was pleasantly warm.
It wasn't that she didn't like autumn. It was a season she always looked forward to, but at her time of life it was nice to know that it was happening hundreds of miles away while she wasn't there. Underneath the table, Gribo dozed on his back with his legs in the air. Occasionally he twitched as he fought wolves in his sleep.
It says in Desiderata's notes, said Magrat, turning the stiff pages carefully, that in the late summer here they have this special traditional ceremony where they let a lot of bulls run through the street.
That'd be something worth seeing, said Granny Weatherwax. Why do they do it?
So all the young men can chase them to show how brave they are, said Magrat. Apparently they pull their rosettes off.
A variety of expressions passed across Nanny Og's wrinkled face, like weather over a stretch of volcanic badlands.
Sounds a bit strange, she said at last. What do they do that for?
She doesn't explain it very clearly, said Magrat. She turned another page. Her lips moved as she read on.
What does, cajonas mean?
They shrugged.
Here. You want to slow down on that drink, said Granny, as a way to put down another bottle in front of Nanny Og.
I wouldn't trust any drink that's green.
It's not like proper drink, said Nanny. It says on the label it's made from herbs. You can't make a serious drink out of just herbs.
Try a drop.
Granny sniffed the open bottle.
Smells like aniseed, she said.
It says absinthe on the bottle, said Nanny.
Oh, that's just a name for wormwood, said Magrat, who was good at herbs. My herbal says it's good for stomach disorders and prevents sickness after meals.
There you are, then, said Nanny. Herbs is practically medicine. She poured a generous measure for the other two.
Give it a go, Magrat. It'll put a chest on your chest.